Wait a minute. Can we explore your Jamie as George Costanza theory a little more? Do you think like Jamie, when he's like in the hot pool with Brienne, like all his junk is like really hanging low, and he's like, "I was in the pool."
He's like, "Doth thou ladies know about the shrinkage?" Welcome back to Vassals of Kingsgrave for our 32nd episode in the great linear reread through Song of Ice and Fire. My name is Adam, also known as Drowned Snow on the forums. I will be your host for the evening, and I am joined by...
Hey, this is Varley on the forums.
Hey, it's Hannah in real life, Shadow Baby on the forums.
Hi everyone, it's Mary in real life, and Nymeria on the forums.
And I believe we might have one or two vassals lurking around that will pop their heads in later. All right, so we are going to be covering the period of September 15th of 299 through September 18th of 299. Last episode ended on the 12th of September with John talking to Bran as a weirwood tree. The next day on September 13th, Rob turns 16, and 2 days later, Kat frees Jamie here. We will skip one chapter in the published order to get there. So the first chapter we have up is, let's see, Cat 7 from Clash of Kings.
Yes, so here we go. So Cat 7, so Cat and Brienne are eating alone in the Great Hall of Riverrun while everyone else celebrates Rob's and Edmure's victories. Cat learned earlier that Theon killed Bran and Rickon, and she's overwhelmed by grief. She tells Brienne about her sons and reminisces about them before suddenly talking about Arya and Sansa. She asks Brienne to come with her to the dungeons at midnight. Meanwhile, she goes to see her father, but he is asleep. She sits with him for hours until Brienne comes to tell her midnight has come. They get down to the dungeons where Kat orders Brienne to see that she's not disturbed, and she enters Jaime's cell. So the wine she sent him earlier has been left untouched. We get a pretty dark description of Jaime, a shaggy beard, long unwashed hair, clothes rotting. The chains don't allow him to stand or lie down comfortably. He's been left in the dark. He is arrogant and insulting still, suggesting that Kat came to have pleasure of him. Kat is revolted and tells him that she needs to know some things. He refuses to tell her anything, but as she leaves, he calls her back, offering to answer her questions if she answers his. In the following back and forth between the two, Jaime admits to being the father of Cersei's children and of pushing Bran from the window. In return, he learns that Tyrion, Cersei, and Tywin are alive. However, he denies sending the assassin to kill Bran and confirms that the dagger wasn't won by Tyrion at the tournament, but by Robert. All this contradicts Peter's story, and Kat sees that something is amiss, but Tyrion and Jaime tell the same tale. A little later in the dialogue, we get the famous line, "So many vows that no matter what you do, you're forsaking one of the other." Kat calls Jaime Kingslayer, and he tells her the truth about how Ned's father and brother died. She is horrified, but she doesn't think it changes anything to Jaime's character. He tells her that he was more loyal to Cersei than Ned was to her, and that, in any case, Littlefinger had her first. She calls for Brienne and asks for her sword, and that's the end of chapter.
Nicely done.
Did anyone think that she actually killed him?
I don't remember what I thought.
I thought, obviously, it did.
I mean, all his answers were just so honest, but kind of flippant at the same time. That it's just like, I figured she just killed him. I don't know. That was my first reread.
I kind of did. I had seen the show like through this part already before I read it. So I thought, oh, is this like where it starts to kind of majorly break away? But then I like...
Once again, the show is ruining your experience.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, no, because it... I mean, I thought, okay, it's maybe it's different, you know? So yeah, I was kind of a little nervous for him. I mean, I didn't really like him at this point, so not that nervous.
He does make a good point about all the vows, and I think it's kind of been talked to death, but you know, this is where you hear the first time where he's like, oh, so many vows they make you say.
I agree.
Titles.
But this whole dialogue.
It's very interesting dialogue, and for people like me, like I picked up the books like after the first episode, I like started reading them basically right away, and so not having to kind of wait between books, maybe you don't get the full effect of this because it's like, oh, and then you just keep reading, and I found out very quickly, you know, what had happened. But I mean, I'm sure that the people who, you know, read this when it was published and then read the next book had kind of a different experience with this chapter than a lot of us did.
Yeah, I mean, this has to be like the same thing as like Brienne yelling out a word, right? Or like Brienne picking up.
I mean, it's supposed to be a cliffhanger, right? So
yeah. So now years later, we still don't. We can guess at what's going to be happening, but like we have no idea.
Yeah. Bina put in a couple of notes here, which are interesting. So there's foreshadowing of Lady Stoneheart, maybe. I can see that. Kat says, what God would let this happen about Bran and Rickon being murdered. But, you know, perhaps she should have had more faith. But they have, answered her prayers. She doesn't realize it. She never finds that out to this point, anyway, in the books.
So this is the beginning of Brienne and Jaime's relationship, right?
Yeah, their interactions.
More in the next chapter.
Had they even really ever met before all this? I'm trying to remember.
I don't think so.
One thing Bina asked is kind of a question that I always wondered is, did Kat really know she was going to free him when she, like, what was her intention going down there? Was she thinking, kill him, free him? She just had no clue and she just felt that she needed to go down there? Like, what was her plan?
I don't know.
I mean, it feels because we're left up in the air. So it feels like maybe it was supposed to be kind of fluid and like maybe she just kind of didn't know and was playing it by ear. But
I think she just wanted like straight answers.
Yeah, but I also think she kind of thought about freeing him from the beginning, even if she wasn't sure she would do it. Because earlier she's mentioning Sansa and Arya and we see that it's hard for her. She really wants the death of Bran and Rickon. It's she takes it really hard, and that's when she starts thinking about how to free her daughters. So she might. I think she at least had the idea.
She just kind of kept her options open, I guess. So let's see. I'm looking here. I'm trying to see. Because right now we've got this is a late Clash of Kings chapter, and we get a lot of bleed over into Storm of Swords now. But there's still. It's going to take. It's a little while before we actually finish out all the Clash of Kings chapters. So,
for Kat,
just interesting. Just for everyone. This is her last chapter, right? Because we have Kat 1 next coming up.
Yes.
Oh, right.
From Storm of Swords, yeah. So, we have, we have Jaime 1, Kat 1, these are all coming up. But you're looking, there's a lot that happens in the timeline further on down the line before we get back to this after Kat 1, I think. So, it's just kind of interesting how this all lays out. Within that time frame there. But I don't know, this was definitely, we can start the Kat hate or whatever. This is kind of one of the biggest points of contention as to like whether Kat was did good, did bad, whatever. I mean, this is kind of the major decision that she makes that affects a lot of things. So, what do we feel about her motivations? What do we think that she thinks would happen here? Like, does she really feel this is positive?
I think she has to, right? Or else she's just a freaking jerk. And I will start with that.
It's funny because this is the one action that she does that I like completely understand and agree with her on. And all the cat lovers, like, it's usually if they love Kat, they hate that she did this, and I literally hate every single other thing she does, and I understand this one right here. I mean, she's backed into a corner. I get it.
Well, I mean, from her, with her current mental state, it makes sense, you know, emotionally, all that, yada, yada. Yeah. But, like, does it, like, how does it make sense? Like, that, you know, do you really trust that this is going to happen? Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I think it's a leap of faith,
but is she just
like, it's
being,
a calculated risk.
It's a Hail Mary, kind of, huh? It's just kind of like, well, if it works, hopefully I get my children back, but how much
totally.
Do you think she's expecting it to work?
She knows she's in the shit for doing this, right? I mean, she's accepted that, the responsibility that, like, what she's doing is wrong. Is it bad for Rob's cause, but it's to get her daughters back? Like, it just benefits her.
Yeah, but I think I think it's interesting that what do we think would have happened if Brienne had succeeded in taking Jaime to King's Landing, and if Tyrion had still kind of been in charge there? I think he would have kept his word, and I think she was right in trusting Tyrion on this. I mean, I don't know, but she clearly thinks that Tyrion is going to keep his word, even though she doesn't believe in Jaime as much.
Well, but also, like, you know, him being Rob, having Jaime, you know, prevents any Red Wedding, right? Because, like, an action like the Red Wedding would never happen if they could chop off Jaime's head. Right, Tywin would never risk.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's absolutely no way. The Red Wedding maybe is capturing Rob, and, you know, at the most. And then now we have a hostage. You have a hostage. We do an exchange. There's exactly. No chopping his head off and murdering everyone at the table. Bruce Bolton is not bold enough to do that. No one does that.
Right.
Yeah, she's giving Tyrion too much credit too. Like, Joffrey would have probably never allowed Sansa to go, you know.
Yeah, but what does this say? I mean, is this more of an indictment of kind of Kat's, you know, mental state and saying, like, oh, you know, she was just hoping that Tyrion would do it? Or does this really give Tyrion some credit for people that, you know, are able to view him objectively, that kind of realize that, you know, yeah, he is kind of a better person to deal with than the rest of the Lannisters, and maybe he will follow through, and, you know, because Tyrion's not known as a liar or a cheater. He's just that, you know, he's the despicable dwarf or whatever. You know, the rumors that they circulate and all that, that's, you know, the common folk. The actual lords and people that have had dealings with him haven't had any of that, right?
Well, I think that's exactly right, because, I mean, she's basing it off of all the time they spent together, going to the Eyrie and everything else, that he's not one to be like, kind of like mince words, you know, whatever. He's like, you know, it wasn't my knife, like, you know, I would never bet against my family. And now he's getting,
yeah,
now she's getting confirmation of this from Jaime that, you know, he even under duress, like, he's not lying.
And so, yeah, it seems like he stuck to his guns even when there was no reason to. And, you know, he was a bit, you know, I mean, he's Tyrion about it, right? But,
right.
You know, and it probably is hard for her to accept, because she immediately wanted to be like, that's his knife. Littlefinger took her in that way, pointed her in that way. But then she realized that Littlefinger betrayed, you know, Ned. And, you know, I think maybe, like, it's hard for her to admit, but she came to kind of realize, like, okay, well, maybe this wasn't anything to do with Tyrion.
Well, just, you know, watching the trial combat up at the Eyrie too, you know, like, he kept to his word and paid what's the dude's name, Morg or whatever, like, he pays him like he says. And when Lysa's trying to, you know, oh, that wasn't fair, and Kat's like, oh no, it was, and you gotta let him go, you know. I mean, I don't think that she's insane. I really a lot of times think that she's stupid and could have avoided a lot of this mess with other better choices, but I mean, that's just me.
Yeah.
Like, not kidnapping Tyrion to begin with?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, well, not leaving Winterfell to begin with. Yeah, that's my biggest thing with her.
I think all of
stay your ass at home.
You're probably right, you know, and of course hindsight, but all of those decisions make sense narratively, especially like grabbing Tyrion, all of that. She's just like, I mean, you know, it's like you know, Ned's like, you're creating an international incident, you know. I gotta go meet with the Prime Minister of Lannisport or whatever, you know. But to her, it's like, oh well, when are we gonna get this opportunity, you know? And as for, you know, she had information from someone that she, you know, had no reason not to really trust.
Is her action here like equating to like a 3 a.m. tweet? Like, it's late, you know, hours of the morning. I'm going to do something stupid that will cause
maybe repercussions. Yeah. Cause she does things that are maybe kind of stupid with good information and good intentions. And, you know, maybe she's just kind of, you know, missing some pieces or whatever. Versus Cersei, who like is her own enemy, right? She creates her own problems.
Yeah.
Kat doesn't do that. So, I mean, that's.
But I think both of them think what they're doing, you know, really is in their self-interest and is the right thing to do. Like, Cersei's a fucking idiot, but I don't think she ever doubts like what she's doing is like the wrong thing to do. Well, like, she's like, no, this is.
Kat,
they're all.
Kat knows
love her children.
Kat knows this isn't right. I mean, as far as, like, for the cause, she knows this isn't right. This isn't going to benefit Rob.
Well, and she knows it's treason.
She's not delusional about that. Yeah. So,
but she thinks, because I'm the king's mom, I can get away with it. Like, if she was anyone else, she'd know that was her head right there. You know?
Right, I mean, and it's like
look at what happens to the car starts, you know?
And that's a whole other, issue of, is that a mistake? I mean, the whole issue with Karr Starks. It's like Rob had to do it, but he also shouldn't have done it. And you know, we've had this discussion, I think, several times.
But do you know what I mean? It's on that
such
level.
Such a rough situation. Yeah.
You went against your liege lord, and not just your liege lord. You're now crowned sovereign.
Yeah, and it's his mother, and can't be shown. He can't be treating her too leniently, or else that's going to look bad to the other lords. And he put her in such an impossible position with this, which really compromised his cause, unfortunately.
It would be interesting if we did have like a Rob chapter just to see that conflict. Like, we kind of see it on the outside through Kat, like with Jane Westerling being like, yeah, he's all upset about this Carter Stark thing. Like, why is he killing his old men? He let his mother go. You know,
every Rob chapter would just be him staring into a mirror, doing his hair, and just being like, why is everyone making it hard work for me? All I do is win the battles, and people just want to give me more headaches. Will someone just do something right for once, other than me?
Dear diary, smolder. I have more pukes.
Maybe he's just like Hodor, and his chapter would just be Jane Westerling tips, Jane Westerling tips, Jane Westerling tips.
Anyway, I mean, we can talk a little bit more about this, obviously, into the next Kat chapter. So is there anything else specifically we want to say about this, or should we move on?
Did you guys, when you were reading this, did you realize that it was Joffrey who sent the knife? Or did you still not know?
No, not here.
No,
definitely not.
I don't think I knew until Tyrion figured it out. And I still don't think I'd have any reason to, you know, foresee it being Joffrey that's sent the knife.
Did you have any other ideas? Because I think when I was reading Littlefinger? I straight up thought it was Littlefinger. Yeah,
Littlefinger.
Littlefinger is the one that gave the information that turned out to be, you know, misleading and betrayed Ned. And so I think, you know, all signs point to him at this point. So,
yeah.
And then my other thing was, I think it's really sad, this chapter, because I understand Kat's, I'll use a Bina word, invidious position here. She's lost her kids.
Oh, no.
Is that what she says?
Conversation,
right?
Again.
Yes, that's what she says.
An impossible situation. She's lost her two youngest kids, and she at least knows where Rob is and what he's doing, even if he's not exactly safe. And then she thinks
lost
that
her she got bad information about her two younger kids.
Well, yeah,
she
but I mean,
like,
from what
she
knows,
goes off,
right?
And does something stupid.
But she's thinking, okay, well, I'll at least get my girls back. And so even if this had been successful and Jaime got there and Tyrion did keep his word, that it's so sad that she doesn't realize they don't have Arya. And I wonder if she knew that or had an inkling of that, would she have acted differently here? Would she have?
Didn't she get like that sort of feeling from Kleos? Like he mentioned Sansa, but never Arya.
Yeah, and I think in an earlier chapter, she tells Brienne, no one knows where Arya is. I mean, she's not actually sure that the Lannisters have her, but hope is better than nothing. So she's still hoping to get them both back.
Let's move on to the next chapter, and then we'll kind of loop back around to this in Cat One. All right.
So we're leaving Clash of Kings and going to Storm of Swords?
We are moving on into Storm of Swords, the first Jaime chapter. Let's see, and that is Hannah.
In our first ever inside glimpse of Sir Jaime, the Kingslayer Lannister, we open with him, Brienne, and his cousin Sir Cleos Frey rowing in a small skiff down the Red Fork of the Trident. After having been freed from the dungeons of Riverrun by Kat in an effort to get the girls freed from the clutches of Cersei's claws, he watches Brienne's work at the oars, inwardly giving her an insulting assessment for her masculine figure. He offers to spell her at the oars if she unshackles him. She refuses. Some sharp words are exchanged, and he ultimately concedes and changes tact. He remembers Cersei being displeased with him for throwing Bran out the window. Cersei was sure they could have tricked or scared the 7-year-old boy into staying silent about what he may have saw. Jaime flippantly tells her that he'll gladly have their relationship made public and go to war over her cunt. After a time, they see the bodies of three women hanging from a tree next to a burned out building that Cleos recalls was an inn. Brio decides that they must be cut down and buried with honor. Jaime advises that they do not stop, but Brienne ignores him and hastens to climb the tree. The women bear a note of their conviction and death sentence. They lay with lions. Jaime laments that that's what whores do and that they died for doing their duty to men on the march. He also very interestingly thinks that Brienne is cruel to cut them down because crows must eat as well. The young lady of Tarth suddenly shouts for them to make back to the boat, and the knights turn to see a cloud of red and blue sail on the horizon. As they flee the pursuing Tully River galley, Jaime chides that hopefully they'll stop to finish digging the horse graves for Brienne, and privately thinks of how Tyrion would be formulating a clever plan to secure their escape, whilst all he can strategize is grabbing a sword and fighting them win or die. For nearly an hour, they are found in a twisting, turning game of cat and mouse with the galley as the river bends, cloak and unmask them over and over. Eventually, the galley catches up to them after Sir Cleos tiredly gives up hope at the oars and Jaime's repeated offer to help row is once again refused. Sir Robin Rhaegar, the captain of the Tully Castle Guard, addresses the bandit party, ordering them to give up and come quietly, saying his orders are to take Jaime back alive if at all possible. He orders archers on the deck to notch, draw, and loose. Arrows fly through the sail of the small yacht into her mast and very closely past Jaime himself. Their skiff is once more a lauded cover in another wind of the water, and Brienne orders Cleos to take the rudder from her, and she quickly disembarks, making for an island jutting from the river. She orders the Frey to give Jaime an oar and begins to climb a cliff face. Jaime is grateful for the weapon, and the two men continue in their chase. The Tully vessel rounds the island and approaches once more. Jaime shouts to Sir Robin to distract him from spying Brienne's ascension and offers to fight him in chains for his freedom. His trick is successful, for as the archers are loosing another flock of closer range arrows at them. Brienne knocks a boulder from the cliff and it smashes into their deck, disabling the river craft. For a moment, Jaime thinks he's free and clear of Lady Catelyn's sworn shield as well as her father's men. But Brienne strides across the top of the cliff and dives into the water to catch up with her quarry and company. Jaime proves he has some measure of a conscience and in his heart and head decides it would be wrong to hope stone. Instead, he idles as Cleos turns their craft toward her and not being able to let a minute pass, being too honorable, poises himself to bash her skull in with his oar as soon as she is in range. Instead, he finds himself lowering it to help her back onto the boat, marveling at the wonder she is for swearing her oath and having the lady balls to keep it. End of.
So did you use a thesaurus for boat? Because we got yacht, vessel, skiff, boat.
Yeah, you just got to mix it up.
The only thesaurus I need is in
river
my
galley.
Actually, it's words he uses in throughout the chapter. So yeah, I just kind of followed him to mix it up, you know. So you're not saying the same word
you know,
over.
Yeah, Matt. I mean, if you'd done the reading, you'd know this.
I have done the reading.
I'm messing with you. So this is actually the day after the last chapter we just had, but it's like almost 200 pages. It's 15 chapters into Storm of Swords before you get this moment. So
where I literally thought like this moment wouldn't have happened because I thought Jaime was dead my first read.
Yeah, so like, I mean you're well into it. You're well into it, and you're like Jaime won. Oh, huh.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see a POV of him. Like I read the prologue and then flipped, and I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, and he really is just a prick, isn't he?
Like, well, right I mean, now, kind of. Right
now, his head the entire time he's just like he's just a prick
here. He's still, you know, bad Jaime, but I mean he has a certain logic and a certain code that he does kind of live by, and you start to see it here, you know.
He's like,
you kind of get it in the last chapter,
my sister's vagina. He's like, I'll start with her cunt. Like that's
well I mean he truly or at least thinks he truly loves her. I mean, it's like in the last chapter when he tells Kat, and he is a dick for saying it, but it's kind of true. I mean, he's been more faithful with Cersei than, you know, your honorable Ned has been. He doesn't know the whole thing with Jon, but based on what they both know in that situation, well, I mean, he is right.
So, right, you know? But being a pull this quote, which is kind of funny. You know, it says, you know, an east wind blew through his tangled hair, as soft and fragrant as Cersei's fingers, you know. So he's like, you know, he's still, he views Cersei in a way that she clearly doesn't really view him, but, you know, he romanticizes their whole relationship as much as he's kind of a dick.
But he also thinks about Tyrion, too, you know, like Tyrion would do this, and, you know, when he's judging Cleos for being kind of a weasel and a fool, you know, he's very family oriented. So it's weird seeing him mashed up with somebody like Kat, who's also very family oriented and makes all her choices based off her family. And he does too. It's just in what we know to be a perverse way.
In a gross way. But well, both of them, if you figure, because I mean, her family is the offspring of her coupling with her brother, which is, you know, it's nice. I mean, gross.
I mean, it's, you start to get the inclination though of him being a human in this chapter and not just this, you know, Gaston type guy running through the streets of King's Landing starting fights.
Yes. Sorry, I'm gonna try to mute myself. I'm watching the Giants. They just scored a touchdown.
No. Oh, God.
About this chapter and also the previous one, I think we see that he's been in prison for quite a while, right? I'm not sure of the exact time frame, but I mean, we see that it has taken its toll on him physically and also mentally. I mean, with Kat, he's a dick, but he also wants to talk to someone. That's he calls her back and stuff like that. And I mean, he got himself in that situation. But imprisonment has been hard. I think it's the beginning of the change for him, already being him imprisoned for so long.
Yeah, and I meant to bring this up in the last chapter, but like, was he really like, he's obviously just goading Kat, but like, was he really expecting that maybe that she wanted to sleep with him? You know, next to, like, women like to fuck next to a bucket full of shit, like, for the sunbathed person.
What? I don't think he was expecting she really wanted that, but
he says it.
Yeah, but he says a lot of things.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So Brienne in the show is very attractive. From what Jamie's thinking in his head, she is Fuggles, right?
Oh, from what everyone thinks in their heads, she's Fuggles. Like when Kat first sees her, you know. I was watching a YouTube video the other day of like what Game of Thrones actors should have looked like, and they did Brienne, and it was pretty funny.
Oh god, it must have been awful.
They like photoshopped Gwendolyn Christie's face, and she looked like she got smacked with Deliverance.
Oh Jesus!
It was awful.
Oh boy. All right.
There was, speaking of the show, I really wish that they had done this whole thing with her going up the cliff and letting that boulder down on the show, as opposed to the stupid fight between her and Jamie on that bridge.
Yeah, I guess they didn't have the chase, but the show didn't have Cleos either, right?
Right, like it's some other homie and he kills him and... Well, they're never at River Run either. I mean, it's all so different. This is when I started to realize, okay, we're really breaking away here.
Right.
I think this between the end of Storm, or sorry, the end of Clash and the beginning of Storm is when they take their separate paths pretty good.
Yeah, that's right, right? The first season and first book are pretty, you know, pretty spot on. And then then they diverge after that.
To be fair, though, to them, I think, because this all takes place, all of the events before they get captured by the Brave Companions is like, what, 4, 5, 6 chapters? So they condensed it down to basically 2-3 scenes.
Right, that's right.
By doing it differently. So I kind of understand, but I just wish that we could have seen her being a badass, like scaling a cliff, you know, Red Pirate Robert status or Black Pirate Robert status, and then knocking a boulder down.
Style.
Style. I think it would have been cool though to see.
Definitely would have been cool. Cool. And also, I might have understood better what she did, because just reading it, I don't know if I just don't visualize things the right way in my head, but I'm like, I don't see how that goes exactly.
He definitely didn't describe it as well as, say, like a feast of any kind.
Yeah, right? Yes. Or two pumps of having sex.
Drogo's seed.
Yeah. So, do you think, like, I mean, Kat's in a bad space right now when she learns that, like, her person wrecked a boat and maybe killed a couple more Tully men? Like, there's, she doesn't even get punished for that.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing's going tits up at this point. Like,
it really has.
Nothing is going according to plan, so stop making plans.
Do you think the Red Wedding was planned after they lost Cleo's Frey, and they're like, they blame that on Kat and Brienne?
Oh, that's an interesting...
Okay, that's my crackpot theory, is if Cleo's had made it to King's Landing, the Freys would never have turned on him. But because they're so tight-knit clan, that once they found out that Brienne and Kat had killed one, or thought that they had killed one, they turned against him.
Oh. I don't think so. I think it would have happened anyway. So I don't think Walder values like some rando relation of his all that much.
Dude, yeah. Cleo's Frey was the Frey that, you know, joined the Freys and Lannisters, right?
Technically, yeah. Yes. It's his father, right? Who's married to the Tywin sister. Cleo's
Gemma?
Yes, Gemma. With M's. Cleo's is Jamie's cousin. And really, I don't think Walder Frey is would care about just an offshoot. I mean, I think the marriage, Rob's marriage, is really the thing that sets him off. And it would have, even if Cleo's hadn't been killed.
Well, the other thing is...
I'm believing my own Kool-Aid. This is a thing. This is a theory that's going to happen.
Well, the thing is, that marriage took place back when the Lannisters, Starks, Baratheons, like, everybody's cool in a time of peace, you know, and they're already married when the Freys declare for Rob.
But Cleo's didn't, right?
But Cleo's didn't, yeah. So I don't know how much bearing that has on the ultimate.
And if Shaggy Dog can have R plus L equals G, give me this. What's more likely?
Hey, I'm about R plus L equals G too.
Oh my god. What do you think, Nymeria? R plus L equals D or my theory?
Your theory. But yes. But that just because
Adam?
R plus L equals D, no.
Doesn't make any goddamn sense. Adam, what's your vote?
Yeah, give me 1 second.
Jock? Is Jock back on?
Yep.
What do you think is more likely, my theory or the R plus L equals D?
Neither.
But which is more likely?
R plus L equals D.
Ooh. Mic drop.
Go back to your tunnel.
Maybe you should get in the tunnel, and then you'll know the truth about R plus L equals D.
All right. I apologize about that, guys.
We apologize.
Equals Daenerys.
Tell Adam your awesome theory.
That Cleo's Frey, without the death of Cleo's Frey, there would have been no Red Wedding.
Cleo's Frey.
Right. By the hands of Kat and Brienne.
Yeah.
So that's my theory. That's my new theory that I'm going to champion. And I'm saying, what's more likely, my theory or R plus L equals D? And so far, I have Hannah and a Scotsman saying R plus L equals D.
The only truly smart person,
Nymeria, has backed my cause.
I'm going to have to say that I'm the deciding vote here. Okay. I'm going to have to say that I think I just don't believe R plus L equals D. And that's something that we will definitively get an answer to. So I think that's going to be a no. And your theory is probably something that we'll always be able to debate and is more likely to have truth involved in it.
Very diplomatic.
Yes, very carefully said.
Oh, I've been carefully saying a lot of things this week.
Yes.
But yeah, no, I mean, I could see that. I could definitely see that. I don't see Daenerys being...
This is bullshit.
What?
I'm just kidding.
I mean, the only theory to me that makes sense is if Daenerys and Jon are somehow twins, like the twin theory. I thought it's kind of cool, but there's so many little details that don't make sense. And I mean, that's the sort of thing where it can just be it could just be incorrect information and all that in the book. So, like, you know, that sort of thing could maybe be justified somehow in the book, but I doubt it.
I thought the theory was that John and Mira were twins.
Well, that's the other, like, that's the really crazy one that,
what?
You know, people are just having fun there. Yeah, that, like, Howlin' Reed took, there were two babies, and so Howlin' Reed took one of them. Yeah. Yeah, so, because the other thing would be, like, if Daenerys, you know, if Daenerys is a twin, like, why is he taking Jon and not Daenerys, right?
Right.
That doesn't make any sense. So, I think it would be cool. You know, and then of course they're going to end up getting married, you know, because that's what Targaryens do. So everything still ends up the same. It doesn't really change anything. You know,
right.
King and queen on the throne at the end of the book. All right. Are we done with Jamie 1, or do we have anything more to say?
I think we're done.
I have one last tiny thing. I just think it's interesting that we get the first kind of flashback of Jaime and Cersei together, and I don't know, it gets us more insight on their relationship, which is always interesting, but that's it.
Yeah, I mean, their relationship is kind of, you know, it's meant to be icky, and, you know, like, you know, it offends our kind of sensibility and all that, but, you know, there's, at least for Jaime's, you know, part, there does seem to be kind of something noble in there.
Yeah, there's definitely actual love, I think, from Jamie. Yeah. So
it's not just the squid babies. So
this was also the first time I realized, like, Cersei's not just straight up, like, psycho cocaine crazy, like, with her going, why the fuck did you push that kid out the window? Like, we could have taken care of it. Yeah. You moron.
Yeah, she's kind of the
never
like,
and he's just like, well, I kind of thought I had to kill a kid. I don't know. I mean, I was like, I'm discovered. Was that the wrong call? I mean,
want me to kill a little kid?
You know, I feel like, you know, if you're familiar with Seinfeld, you know, George is like, should I not have done that? Was that not the right call?
Yeah.
Right.
That's so moving forward, I imagine
Jamie, you know, as George Costanza. Because, you know, I got to plead ignorance here. If pushing the kid out the window wasn't right, I didn't know. But anyway, let's move on to Cat 1 from A Storm of Swords. And this is, let's see, where do we jump? It's the same day as Jamie 1. So, and this is still, these are back-to-back chapters in the book.
Wait a minute, can we explore your Jamie as George Costanza theory a little more? Do you think, like,
Jamie,
when he's, like, in the hot pool with Brienne, like, all his junk is, like, really hanging low, and he's like, I was in the pool.
He's like the doth thou ladies know about the shrinkage? But you know what? I mean, you know, Jamie has the flowing locks of hair, so, you know, he doesn't really have to compensate for anything. He doesn't have to worry. You know, he doesn't even need one hand. Right, you know, one-handed. He's still a greater swordsman than most people in the land. Right. So,
do you imagine, like, when they find out somebody sent a knife after Bran? It's like that scene in Seinfeld where they're out in L.A. and they're like, "Because the murderer struck again." Have you ever seen that?
Thank you for calling Raven Phone.
Why don't you just tell me what castle you want to reach? Yeah.
To reach Lannisport.
This is
you've selected Brown Eyed Girl. Seinfeld.
Selected Jane Westerling's hips.
You've selected R+L=?. If this is correct.
Why don't you just tell me what crazy theory you selected?
No bowl of brown for you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, why isn't there, like, a Seinfeld Westeros Tumblr or something?
We're doing it right now. This needs to be a thing.
We need to meme this up and make it happen. Okay, anyway, so let's move on to Cat 1 from A Storm of Swords. Yes. This is a consecutive chapter in the book. It's about 200 pages in the book. So, you know, right after Jamie won. And let's see. We have Sir Desmond and Uthrai Swain, which Rototrice pronounces as Arthurize. Arthurize Swain! I don't know why he says that. They meet with Catelyn and try to decide what was he done with her. Obviously she didn't run or try to hide it or anything. I think she just straight up was like, here's what I did, you know, once Jamie was on the way out. They do not want to put her in chains because that, you know, looks really bad and everything. They decide that she must be confined to a cell until Edmure returns. She suggests her father's chambers, so instead she can comfort him in her final days, and everyone agrees to that because they're all decent people. Lord Hoster is sleeping when Catelyn arrives in his chambers. He wakes up, and when she speaks and calls her Tansy, she doesn't know who this is. And Catelyn asks, Hoster answers that she will have many trueborn sons. Then she asks the Maester if he knows any Tansy, but he does not. She's all really concerned about this Tansy chick. I think she probably thinks it's a mistress or something. I don't really know. Catelyn notices the arrival of a raven and asks about the news. The Maester tells her it was from Rob. He has stormed the crag, which is all going to work out really well for him, I believe. It's not that big of a deal. And Catelyn puzzles on what her father said and concludes that Lysa must have lost a child before Lord Hoster made her marry John Arryn. And let's see, she writes a letter to Lysa urging her to come, or at least send a letter, and gives it to the Maester, you know, because her father's dying, and, you know, it's the last chance to see her father, etc. So, what do we think?
So, I don't know. I don't like this chapter.
Sorry, I'm just still thinking about like, Seinfeld mashups.
It's a very procedural chapter, right? You know, I mean, you know,
right.
It's a chapter about nothing. Am I right? but no, it's just sort of like all of this. I mean, except for the bit about Tansy and kind of laying that out. Really, this all is like off screen stuff that could have happened. I mean, not that it's, you know, a waste of a chapter or anything, but this is just like you assumed. You know, she was going to talk to them and they were going to have to put her somewhere, you know, hold her somewhere and figure out what's going on, yada, yada, yada. And we get the, you know, it's exposition, you know, we get the information about the crag, which is significant. Tansy, what else is there?
So do you think that Kat's having like a hard time, like, or moving forward with just trusting men? Because first Ned comes back with a bastard, and then all of a sudden she thinks her father was like sleeping around and with this girl named Tansy, and like, do you think that affects her moving forward?
Yeah, and well, like her son here, has a marriage pact that he violates in a time of
I war. Think unfortunately the Ned bastard thing kind of did as much damage as was ever needed to be done there. Yeah.
Like, but I thought
and it's she, you know, and that's a little bit on her, you know, because like they barely knew each other, and he went off. Like, let's say it's all true, you know, they barely knew each other. He went off and got he got a bastard, slept with someone else, and pretty much every other lord in the realm does far worse than Ned. And it doesn't seem like her dad was like some huge womanizer or anything that would really, like, I don't know where she would kind of have this issue that like it's just like the worst thing, and you know. Like how she hates John so much and all that. Yeah, I don't know where all that comes from.
Interesting.
I also, was really interested in the Tansy thing. Sorry.
Yeah, no. So the Tansy thing, like, as a woman, she didn't pick up that, like, oh, maybe it's Tansy tea, like the abortive that I've taken before, or that have taken before.
It seems like it's probably because if you're only using it for a purpose like that, which is not, you know, it's not reputable, right? So no one's going to talk about it. And there's not a lot of, like, resources for women in this world or for people in general. So I can very easily see that if she had never had occasion to, like, have a pregnancy that she didn't want it or know someone that had that situation, how she would just be completely ignorant of Tansy tea and all that.
Yeah, but I think, not, I mean,
they wouldn't be like, oh, everyone knows you get Tansy tea to get rid of those unwanted babies. You know, like, I feel like that's just, people aren't going to be discussing that. It's not going to be something that people are going to be telling their kids, make sure, you know, you get that tansy tea if you ever get in trouble. Like, you know, like, that's just not.
I wonder that it would be, because in a society where you're supposed to, like, your marriage as, like, you know, a virgin, you know, people are still having fun and, you know, need to get rid of any unwanted burdens that would.
Well, I know, but that's what I'm saying, is that because there's a need for it in this world, and there are people that do know about it because of that. But there's also such a stress put on, you know, like, you know, virginity, you know, chastity, things like that. And so it's just not going to be discussed, you know, because I mean, think about people even in our world, you know, when you talk about abortion and stuff and sex education, and like, they don't want kids to have condoms. Yeah, they're like, well, we don't want them to know condoms exist, you know, because then that'll make them have sex, you know, like, so
right, it's sort of the same sort of thing,
you know. But I mean, I'm just saying that's how people think when that's the attitude they have towards matters like this. So I can totally understand how most people just have no idea about this stuff.
Do you think the fathers are just like, if my boy's having sex, I want him to feel it? That's why no condoms in school.
Dragon skin condoms are just too expensive.
No, because if that was the case, there'd be more uncircumcised boys.
Oh boy.
Are we talking in real world, or what are we talking about?
Yes, we're talking in real world, I think.
Kinda.
Well,
we're going off the rails. Who's hosting this thing?
It's as real as it gets on BOK.
Yeah, so we'll cut out all of the uncomfortable foreskin talk.
Wait a minute, what are you gonna do? Cut off the intent?
that was the joke.
Okay,
it just kind of slipped through there, I guess. Anyway,
there's another Seinfeld thing, that episode with the Moyle with the breasts.
That sounds rough.
Yes. So, you got to really believe in your religion.
Well, but to be like, yeah, I mean, I understand a lot of people have it done for reasons, but like, to be the dude that has to go around doing it, be like, no, nope, not me. You know, and I spend all day, you know, staring at, you know, blood and guts and organs and things. So, yeah.
Wait, you do?
Yeah, I work in surgery.
Oh, I thought you were a serial killer.
No. Of course not. No serial killers have a medical background. That's just not how it works.
Well, my grandfather had his circumcision done when he was like 73.
Oh, Lord, no. Do we have anything else to say about this?
But everyone else sounds robotic.
Oh, gosh, Matt. Matt, it's your chapter. Wake up,
but
Matt.
It just sounded
it's
like
Christmas
a
Day. It's Christmas Day, Matt. Wake up.
Matt, it's a Festivus for the rest of us. But I really want Seinfeld Westeros cast to be a thing, though. Like, it's all I can think about at this point. So,
you know what? That could be like a 20-minute, like, Westeros Seinfeld. Let's just get together and, you know. Yeah.
Hey, Matt.
So does anyone have anything else to say about Cat 1 before we move on?
Oh, wait. Let's catch Matt up. I was telling them about how my grandfather was circumcised when he was 73.
Oh,
because
why?
He was drunk. Because he was a drunk. And he stopped taking care of his personal hygiene. And he was getting infections. So
yeah, man, that stuff's a hassle. You just got to get rid of them. They're bored.
Wait a minute. So he needed to cut off his foreskin because he couldn't take care of his schmegma?
Yep.
Yeah, he was getting infections, so his urologist
advised that. He was a little bit schmorking on his schmegma.
He should get a circumcision, and they put him to sleep for it.
But then he had several days of, like, I'm in the worst pain, I bet, so that sucks.
Yeah, but he was a drunk, so he was numbing his pain anyway.
Well, I'm sure they have painkillers too, but yeah.
Yeah, but even drunks masturbate. What's a wait time on that?
A long time.
Maybe if he just thought really hard about it. I don't know.
All right, so does anyone have anything else to say on Cat 1 before we move on?
I think I'd just like to say I think I put the vision of Hannah's grandfather masturbating into her head, and I don't think she likes it.
All right, not, then. So Sansa not 8.
Not, not the greatest.
We move on to September 18th in King's Landing for Sansa 8 of Clash of Kings. And I believe that is Varley.
Sorry, man. I'm trying to get it together here. So I'm just going to read off of Tower of the Hand, because otherwise my... Oh, my God. My dog's farting. It
we'll do it
awful.
Live.
What's that? Otherwise, just, my recap of live. This chapter is just...
Yeah, just do it.
Okay. So
you do you.
Matt, I really feel your pain because our little Frenchie, too. Oh, God damn.
Oh my God, it's stinging the back of my head. It smells.
There's another Seinfeld thing. He farted on my sister the other day and it was in her clothes. And I was like, oh, it's like the BO episode on Seinfeld. And she didn't know what I was talking about.
I met this wildling. Wildling, I can't remember her name, but it rhymed with a part of the female anatomy.
Mulva?
Mulva?
Oh, Dolores.
Dolores. And I think she...
Okay.
So, Matt.
Joffrey and his court, including Cersei's Varys, Lord Giles, Lady Tanda, Lolly's Follies, Jalibah Joe, the High Septon, Dantos, and Moonboy, all gathered in the throne room. Sansa makes her way to the front of the gallery just as Lord Tywin rides in on his horse. Joffrey meets him at the base of the throne, names him savior of the city, and asks him to assume governance of the realm. After Lord Tywin takes his seat, the heroes of the Battle of the Blackwater come forward one by one. First is Lord Mace, followed by his sons, Loras and Garland. Joffrey moves to greet them and allows them each a boon from the throne. Loras asks to be put on the King's Guard. Mace asks for a seat on the small council, and Garland asks for Joffrey to marry Margaery. Joffrey grants the first request. Following them are men of lesser rank who distinguish themselves. Sir Philip Foot, who slew Bryce Caron, Lorthar Brune, who captured Sir John Fossaway and slew Sir Brian Fossaway and Sir Edwin Fossaway to earn him the nickname Lothar Apple Eater. Willa, a man at arms who in service to Sir Harry's, who saved his master's life, and Jasmine Peckledon, a young squire who killed two knights and wounded another and captured two more. Sir Philip is made Lord Philip and granted the Caron lands, rights and incomes. Lothar is made a knight and promised land somewhere in the Riverlands. Jasmine is given a sword, a suit to play, a war horse, and the promise of knighthood when he comes of age. Willa is giving new weapons, armor, and the honor of his two sons being taken in as squire and page at Casterly Rock. Next came the captains, blah, blah, blah. So it just keeps on going on like this, and then Sansa goes to the Godswood, talk to Dantos, and Dantos is like, you dummy. He's not going to let you leave you alone. But then Dantos gives her a hairnet that says, and this is like the best part of the chapter, that it represents justice, vengeance, and home. And that's it. The only couple of notes that I have from this chapter is that first, the difference between the show and the book, they really like in just... as far as the show is very drab and Martin really puts up like the colors of each sigil, like, you know, just like, it just seems like a very colorful kind of court going on. And the next is the horse takes a big dump and he calls it the homage. And yeah. Just that we see Baelish now getting, you know, Harrenhal, and no one knows
a big shit in the show.
Yeah, but they don't call it a homage.
It goes without saying.
Right. And so, but no one really knows what Peter Baelish did until later, right? Like that he helped arrange Marjorie.
Yeah, no, I don't think at this point.
Yeah, so. So besides that, I guess... No, it's not our first view of Tarly. We don't get really a lot of new information. Just that, like, certain people were fucking badass. Lothar Brune, in the book, it says he cut through half a hundred Fossaway men to get to the Fossaways, two of which he killed, one he captured. That's like Lord of the Rings style, like, carnage, like, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, anyway. So, yeah, and Sansa gets a hairnet, and she's like, what the fuck? I need a ship home, not a fucking hairnet, you dumb dick.
Yeah. And he's like, this hairnet is justice and vengeance and escape.
And home.
And she's like, it is a fashionable accessory that is currently in style this season. I don't know what you like, she really should have questioned that. But
right. You
know, Bina's like, why didn't she just ask, why is this an instrument for justice and vengeance? I'm a little confused.
Right. It's for flyaways, not for justice and vengeance.
Hey, you know what flyaways are?
Is that like a question that I should answer?
Yeah. What are flyaways? What are,
I'm like impressed that you know what they are.
It's when girls' hair gets all caught in the wind and like, you know, yeah. Even though it's supposed to be all hanging down, there's like one piece like all helter skelter.
See, you're very aware.
I wasn't, but that's probably the English language barrier thing.
What do you call hairs that are out of place on a woman's head? Usually due to the wind.
I don't know. We don't have a specific word for this.
They're French, so they always look great and their hair's in place.
Exactly.
Duh. Do you have duh in French?
Nope. Not really.
Monty.
They're so smart, they don't even have duh. They're like, yeah. How would someone She's use like, this?
I would never have occasion to use that word.
Well, we also pick up a lot of things from English, so we kind of now say things like that, even though it's not French at the beginning. And also, we don't, English is very, sounds, how to say this? You make up words using the sounds, and it's very full of imagery, you know? And in French, we do that way less. We don't use single syllables to mean something, usually.
So, with that being said, like, do you read a translated version of the books, or do you read the English books?
Both. I started in French, and then I said, no way, I'm waiting a year for book five, and then I bought them in English. So, and now I'm waiting even more, but at least I can read them as soon as they get out.
How are the translations? Do you find them similar, or do you find them, like...
So the translator changed, actually. So the first four books, I don't know, are a really flowery language, like kind of medieval, way more than Martin does. And then it got kind of more normal language. I like both, actually. I really got into the book in French first, so it obviously didn't bother me too much, but it's really different. And I think they're doing an amazing job at translating the nouns, the nouns for the cities, the castles and stuff like that. It's really kind of a poetic thing to do, and they're doing a good job with that.
So what do you think about the chapter, though?
What chapter?
My God, what was his name?
Oh man. So let's the official part about this. Do we have anything else to say about Sansa 8, about any of these chapters in general? Anybody?
No, that just this was a good like kind of mic drop moment for Sansa where Dantos is like and home, and that was like the end of her chapter. Like that's what the hair never.
Yeah. Jock, you have anything to say?
Oh, he's bailed out, right?
No.
Oh, I thought he was back. No.
He's
Nymeria. Anything?
Nope.
All right. Well, let's officially close this out then. So, thank you guys.
Like, stop making sign references.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand. Shit.
No one said that. But so yeah. So thank you guys for joining me. And I believe Bina will be hosting the next episode, which is going to cover September 28th of 299 through October 1st of 299. And it's going to be Arya 10, Jon 8, Jaime 2, Theon 6, and Bran 7. And that's mostly from Clash of Kings with one Storm of Swords chapter in there with Jaime. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Adam. I'm glad you made it.
I was just trying to figure out how a hairnet gate applies to Seinfeld. so you can see where my head is at right now.
I cannot help with that. I just don't get any of your references on that. So
you don't have Seinfeld?
Never seen Seinfeld?
I haven't. No, it's not a very popular thing in France.
Yeah, it's an English language sitcom from the 90s. I don't necessarily think that.
Yeah, I've
popular
heard the name.
Everywhere.
I've heard the name, but,
you know what I mean? I think in some I think in some countries it did play pretty well, like some of those shows do, but not everywhere. So.
Yeah, I think it was like popular in Germany.
Yeah, because it's a bunch of people in New York, and they're like, "We're just waiting at a Chinese restaurant all day," you know, and you send that to people in the wrong country, and they're like, "What is food?" You know,
Jesus. Out there for food. What the fuck?
Right, they've got TV, but they don't have food.
They don't have giant grocery stores full of, you know, like, I mean, just a lot of countries, you know, just like the lifestyle is different. And I mean, New York is different than a lot of America as well, too. So, you know,
that's true.
I just think it doesn't translate everywhere. So shrinkage is universal.
It might have been a thing even in France. It's just I'm kind of maybe too young to know that, but.
How okay. I can't speak French, but I can laugh in French. Oui, Jerry, I am going. I wonder what French Kramer would be. Oh, man. Kramer is the next door neighbor that just, like, bursts in the door. Okay?
Je m'appelle Kramer.
Oh, it's a Jerry.
Like, giddy up.
Yeah. Yeah, what would be the French version of giddy up? He always said giddy up. I don't know. Let's see who would, you know, okay. So Newman is obviously going to be like your Lord Frey type character who just kind of shows up at bad moments.
No, he's
kind
like
of a
cross between Littlefinger and Varys.
He doesn't really ever scheme much though. He mostly is just like a bottom feeder though.
He's always scheming.
He tries
bottle
to,
deposits.
But you know what I mean? Like, oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
The mailbag, so he can go, when he didn't get the promotion to Hawaii.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
Where the air is so really sweet. The
time that he tried to steal those embryos from Jurassic Park. That too.
The time that he was sleeping with the landlord's wife.
Oh, yeah, for free.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, oh, wait, who would that be then?
The landlord's wife.
Be like one of the. maybe that's like.
Isn't that
Outrain Waters, you know, running off with stuff?
Wasn't like Black Walder like sleeping with everyone's wife in the Walder clan?
Oh, he was sleeping with all
his
cousins and sisters and everyone, right? Like anyone that's like not too closely related to him, he was sleeping with, I think. So,
I think better
it's implied
question
at some
is...
point that. Okay, go.
No, you go ahead.
I said, I think it's implied that almost a couple of like Walder Frey's sons are actually Black Walder's sons.
Yeah. I mean, that's the.
Gross.
I think we can assume that. Well, I mean, because he's like this, you know, 75 year old man marrying 15 year olds.
No, he's like 90, right?
Well, but I mean, like, over the years is what I'm saying, like, because he keeps remarrying. So he's always marrying these young women and then getting new ones and new ones. So. Yeah.
What's it, he says something gross like the honey is all for me or something.
But who's like, who pops up in Ice and Fire just all the time randomly? I don't know. You could say
the Drake.
The Drake.
The Drake.
Hate the Drake.
Yeah. Love the Drake.
What's
the Jake and Hagar to... the Jake and Hagar reality tour?
Nice. Well done.
Oh, Doctor. Watley. Tim Watley.
Yeah.
Dude, becomes Jewish just for the jokes.
Yeah.
I'm an anti-Gentite.
Oh.
I am not an anti-Gentite.
We're like really like
his face.
Tywin is obviously the soup Nazi. I mean, obviously. That's Tywin. No gold for you.
Yeah. I see Tywin more of a J. Peterman. And I see Mace Tyrell as Steinbrenner.
No, you know, Tywin is Susan's dad.
Yeah, Susan's dad was a boss.
Who's the guy who was the gym teacher? Can't stand ya.
Mandelbaum.
Oh, God damn it, Mandelbaum.
That's like the Umbers or the Mormons, you know. Mandelbaum. It's like the 70-year-old man out there like lifting weights.
You think you're better than me?
You know, I kill wildlings in my sleep, you know. Umber.
Who's the guy, Jerry's neighbor or Jerry's parents' neighbor with the pen and the car, the Cadillac?
Oh,
you telling me
Jack or
there are no castles available in all of the language?
Yes,
I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
So more Seinfeld stuff.
Oh yes, I figured out what the hairnet equivalent.
And... Ooh, what is the hairnet equivalent?
It's the glasses. It's the frames.
I was gonna say it was the wedding envelopes.
Mm.
Oh my gosh, the
poison wedding
envelopes.
That's so much better, actually.
Lady Sansa's wedding invitations. She let her mother-in-law, Cersei, lick them.
And Sansa literally has to be like George Costanza when he's like trying to get the apartment from the Andrea Doria survivor. He's like, I could go bummer to bummer with anyone on the planet.
The Andrea
Doria. He's like, I lost my father, my brothers.
And you know, the greatest thing to me about all that too is like, as much talk about sponges as there was on that show, a simple sponge could have saved his fiance's life.
Yep.
Who wants to lick all those envelopes anyway? Just a damp sponge, and you're good to go.
Oh my God.
I mean, come on, or use your finger.
So, Tyrion on the road to Volantis. That's like. The episode where Elaine's back in coach and Jerry's up in first class. Would you like more?
Oh, yeah.
Would you like more anything? More everything.
Yeah.
I don't want a kosher meal.
You know,
well, that's a bummer ending to a fun podcast.
VOK PSA.
Yeah.
Handle your shit.
Get your affairs in order.
Yeah.
Yeah, or you'll end up like Rob.
Because winter is coming for us all one day.
All right, so if one's going to get lost, it's going to be this one. Okay.